my cousin's house down near the river. His house is completely off its foundation and twisted.
Crooked Creek residents assess the flood damage. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 11th of May. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, an amendment aimed at Alaska Native corporations comes up for a committee vote in Congress.
Neither side had a majority, and it was amazing. And I thought, uh-oh, trouble. I could see in the room we were going to be in trouble.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
The House Finance Committee today began hearing from the public about the capital budget the Senate passed last night. At the same time, the Judiciary Committee focused on that budget's contingency language used to protect energy projects from line item vetoes by Governor Sean Parnell. Senators put in the protective language in response to threats from the governor that he would veto projects favored by those who blocked passage of a bill reducing taxes on oil companies. It bundled $450 million in energy-related projects with the statement that if the governor vetoed any single project, the entire bundle would be eliminated. That contingency language is the major point of friction among all parties in the fight over the budget. Attorney General John Burns said it would effectively eliminate the governor's veto powers, and there's no question in his mind that would make it unconstitutional.
The plain language of the Constitution itself affords the governor the authority in two parts. It is the authority to strike or reduce appropriation items, not bundles of appropriation items. In other words, Section 48, by its plain language, violates Article 2, Section 15. It not only prohibits the striking of an item, it also eliminates the ability of the governor to exercise his constitutional right to reduce an item.
Director of Legislative Legal Services Doug Gardner told the committee that while he agrees with much of what the attorney general had said, there is another side to the issue. He said the argument shows an imbalance between the legislature's power to appropriate and the governor's power to veto. However, he said the governor still has the ability to accept the bundle or he can veto the bundle.
The net result is both parties come back to zero. I would submit to you that one way to look at this situation is that is a perfect balance that's still maintained, despite perhaps extreme situations where there are a large group of projects tied together with contingencies, the governor acts, everything goes back to zero. And the money remains for appropriation. And perhaps the framers were wise and realized that both parties will ultimately need to work together in some way in order to move forward.
There was no action needed as a result of the hearing. It was to educate legislators on the issue. Lawmakers who haven't made their minds up over the capital project's budget will have new information on which to base their decisions. The village of Crooked Creek is going on its fourth day without power. Floodwaters have dropped 4 to 5 feet from their high mark last night, but much of the town is still inundated. Experts are warning that the threat there is not over yet, but during the lull, some residents are trying to make sense of the devastation. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson reports.
No one in Crooked Creek can remember such widespread devastation. Even the elders, says Crooked Creek resident Julia Zakar.
It still seems like we're dreaming or we're waiting to wake up from a dream, but we haven't woken up yet.
Zakhar says it started on Sunday night. She noticed water flowing upstream in the Crooked Creek, which the village is named after. She decided to take her four children to higher ground at the village school.
The school road was already filling over with water, and just like in seconds it was over the road.
But it went from being on top of the bank and we were all having a joke, well, it looks like we got a normal year, a little bit high water, and we were leaving it at that. And in the space of less than a half hour, the water was surging up at least 4 feet.
That's Denny Thomas, who stayed in the village during the worst of the flooding.
I'm an outlaw bush rat from Crooked Creek. If there's a flood going on, you got to come haul me out with a chopper. You know, somebody had to at least stay here and tell everybody what happened.
What happened, says Thomas, was complete and total disaster. An ice jam a few miles downriver backed up the Kuskokwim River. He watched as floodwaters submerged homes and ice chunks broke telephone poles like toothpicks.
You can't even describe how horrible a feeling it was when you just saw everything and you don't know who all your friends and family in town are. They okay? The phones are out, the power's out, nobody can get a hold of anybody else.
The nearby mine company, Donlin Creek, began shuttling mainly women, children, and elders to their exploration camp. Zakhar, though, stayed back, wanting to help her family, but she now admits there was not much she could do. The overpowering waters uprooted her sister's house next door.
I was first worried about the ice chunks hitting my house, because at least it's still standing. But now I'm worried about her house bumping into my house.
Zakhar says the devastation is affecting many in her family.
My cousin's house down near the river, his house is completely off its foundation and twisted. And my brother Ivan's house, he doesn't have a house anymore. It's to where his cabin just flipped upside down and is floating somewhere.
Her husband and family members used boats, driving through ice and debris to salvage what they could. The last thing they brought from her house was for her son.
My cousin, he even pulled my son's toy boxes out and put them in the boat. So, I mean, just to see what they tried to save. And my son is 5 years old, and he was very happy to see that they had time to grab his toy boxes. And everything else that they tried to bring, and I couldn't hold it in anymore. I just broke down and started crying, because it was such a big relief that they weren't near my house anymore, where the water was so high, and that they were with us. And he still goes out and try to help the rest of the village and family with the boat, but at least I don't have to worry about him being near our house anymore.
People are still huddled together where they can. Over 50 evacuees are still at the mine camp, and others are at the school. Denny Thomas had a stash of wood he's relying on to keep guests warm in his wet house until power returns. Before the breakup, the Alaska River Watch forecasted flood danger as low to moderate. But Thomas says even if they had predicted flooding, there's only so much you can do.
People that live out here, and it's not just Crooked Creek, it's all the way from the headwaters down to the coast. People know about breakup, they know about preparing for breakup. But there was just absolutely no way to prepare for any of this. It happened so quickly.
But Thomas is still thankful, like many residents there, that everyone came out of the flood uninjured.
Nobody got killed. Everybody's accounted for and everybody's healthy. So, you know, we'll have everybody here to help us put it back together.
The flooding may be subsiding in Crooked Creek, but there's still hundreds of miles and dozens of villages yet to feel the full force of breakup this spring. The villages just below Crooked Creek are feared to be in the most imminent danger. It's there that the Kuskokwim ice pack is holding strong and creating jams. Thomas has these words of caution.
Everything else will be replaced. Your lives cannot. So just remember that. Don't even mess around. Evacuate if you have to, but do not even stand in its way.
Bethel Search and Rescue has been on the ground in Crooked Creek. They're warning residents there that the danger is not over yet. When the jam does release, all of the ice and even the village's destroyed possessions could flush out quickly, causing a new wave of destruction. When the jam does release, all of the ice and even the floating homes could flush out quickly, causing a new wave of destruction. Reporting from Bethel, with help from Chris Ho, I'm Shane Iverson.
An attempt by Senator John McCain to limit the federal program that gives special contracting opportunities to Alaska Native corporations failed today. Senator Mark Begich successfully fought McCain's efforts, and in a surprising twist, one of the program's biggest detractors didn't show up for the vote. The Small Business Administration's 8A program gives special breaks to Native-owned corporations which are seeking government contracts. They can bid without competitors, partner with larger corporations, and they never age out of the program, no matter how much money they make. McCain's amendment would have capped contracts at $4 million for services and $6.5 million for property deals. It would allow for exceptions. Those amounts could go higher if the contracting officer can justify the sole source contract in writing and the justification was made public and sent to Congress. But Senator Mark Begich, who sits on the committee where McCain floated his amendment, countered it. Begich was pleased with the outcome.
I thought, uh-oh, trouble. I could see in the room we were going to be in trouble. So we just made our pitch. He made his. He didn't like one of the comments I said, but that's okay. And at the end of the day, we prevailed.
The biggest congressional critic of the Small Business Administration program sits on the committee that took the vote, but she didn't show up. Senator Claire McCaskill could have submitted a proxy vote, as some of her colleagues did, but she did not. If she had, it could have meant a win for McCain's plan. McCaskill's office says she was tied up today with other issues. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Sitka's independent bookseller works to keep up with the changing times.
It gives us a way to compete in this growing ebook industry.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein. Attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
The unemployment rate for young military veterans has climbed as high as 27% in recent months, far higher than the national average of about 9%. That spurred both of Alaska's senators to sign onto a bill that would help vets get jobs when they leave the service. The legislation, named the Hiring Heroes Act, would require broad job skills training for all service members returning home. Washington State Democratic Senator Patty Murray is the main sponsor. She warned at a press conference outside the Capitol today that without action, America's veterans risk being left behind.
I just think it is inherent upon our generation today to say, what are we doing to make sure that the servicemen and women who come home from Iraq and Afghanistan 20 years from now have had a great career, have been able to take care of their families, and don't end up homeless or on drugs or alcohol abuse or become a generation lost.
Alaska Senator Mark Begich is sponsoring a range of legislation aimed at easing the transitions of veterans leaving the war zone and returning to civilian life. But he says making sure vets can get jobs is a crucial piece of the puzzle so they can provide for themselves and their families and find self-worth.
There is family issues, there are medical issues, there is care that's necessary after. That may not be as visible because it's not physical, it may be as mental. As here, it's about jobs and employment. And it's really trying to put all these pieces on the table and saying, okay, we recognize they are a huge asset for us as a country. They fought the wars. Now we have to make sure the services are available for them.
Begich and other senators were joined at the legislation's launch by Eric Smith, a two-tour Iraq War combat veteran from Baltimore, Maryland, who can't find a job. Smith served in the U.S. Navy as a hospital corps man, but has been told by hospitals he doesn't have the right civilian certifications. He pointed to one job at a hospital that was far less rigorous and difficult than his Navy service, but he still didn't get it.
Unfortunately, despite my knowledge and experience, I was ultimately disqualified from the position for lack of civilian equivalent certifications. I was disappointed by this outcome, However, I was more frustrated by the reality that graduation from Naval Hospital Corps School, in which I was trained, and years' worth of experience provided me with no certifications that translated into the civilian world.
The vets bill would start studies to identify the equivalent between military and civilian certifications and skills. It would also provide training, counseling, and other services for vets as they look for jobs. A Sitka retailer has become the 250th bookstore in the nation to sell Google ebooks, similar to the texts people can download on Kindles or other popular devices. That's a milestone that might be more important to Google than to the general public. But as KCAW's Ed Ronco reports, it's also a sign of a changing industry.
The first thing you might see when you walk into Old Harbor Books in rainy Sitka is a wrinkled paper sign which declares in capital letters, "Please don't drip on the books." As of this week, it could just as easily say,
"Don't drip on your e-reader."
That's because the bookstore now sells Google e-books. The electronic books are readable on any device with a web browser, so no need to spend $100 or more for a special handheld reader. And more importantly, for Don Muller, one of the store's co-founders, Google lets independent bookstores, like this one, make money.
It gives us a way to compete in this growing e-book industry and to compete with Amazon, finally.
The online bookseller Amazon owns the popular Kindle e-reader, a tablet-sized device that only accepts books purchased from Amazon directly. Amazon did not respond to a request for an interview. When Kindle and devices like it became popular, Muller says independent bookstores like Old Harbor felt it at the cash register. Industry predictions were that a store like Old Harbor could lose 10% of its business to ebooks, but Muller says the impact has been deeper than that and is still growing. Selling Google ebooks, he says, could help make up some ground.
You know, it may be too late for independent bookstores, and it may be too late for dead tree books at a level that supports independent bookstores. But this is a very good step forward in that battle with Amazon.
I think our members are very interested now in the opportunities that are out there with ebooks.
Matt Supko is technology director for the American Booksellers Association, which represents about 1,600 independent bookstores in the U.S. and Canada, including 11 in Alaska.
In most cases, for most popular titles, our member stores are going to be selling their Google ebooks at the same price as Amazon and Barnes & Noble and other retailers like that. So certainly on the price front, there are opportunities for us that there haven't been in some time.
Google says under its ebook system, retailers and publishers get the lion's share of the money. A spokeswoman for Google says the company can't get more specific. Back in Sitka, Muller says the cut is smaller than what Old Harbor would get for a hard copy sale of the same book, but only because hard copy books go for more money.
It's better than nothing at all. And the money that does come to us comes to Sitka, comes to the community. It's a way of shopping locally for people in Sitka that still want to have an e-book and use that format.
Muller works part-time for the store after years as its manager, and he's seen a lot of change in the book industry. Selling ebooks is just the latest, and Muller says doing it Google's way could help stores like Old Harbor Books to keep turning profits as more and more people begin turning electronic pages. In Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, based in Alaska's interior, growing across the nation. The University of Alaska Fairbanks now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
May is Foster Care Awareness Month, and Anchorage's Big Brothers Big Sisters is teaming up with Covenant House on a volunteer mentoring program to help foster children who are cycling out of foster care. Alaska has about 2,000 children in foster care. Almost half of them may face homelessness at some point in their lives after they leave their foster families. Nicholas McMillan is program director for Big Brothers Big Sisters of Alaska in Anchorage.
We're working with youth who are aging out of the foster care system. The age range that we are working with is 16 to 21. We're looking at helping foster care youth have a positive adult in their life who can help them find a job, just hang out and have a good time, kind of help them with maybe life skills.
The mentoring program can start when foster children are as young as 16, while they are still living with a family, McMillan says. Foster children usually cycle out of foster care at age 18 or 21. McMillan says statistics show that after they leave care, many foster youth do not fare well.
About 30% of foster care youth who age out are homeless within the first year. That means they're living on the streets or they're couch surfing. You know, that's a statistic that isn't in the general population. Another statistic that we also have is that about 17% of foster care youth who age out of the system attend college, and only about 1% of that actually earn a four-year college degree.
McMillan says foster youth often go into other government programs like welfare or even prison. The mentor program is aimed at changing that dynamic. The new pilot program is operating in Anchorage, the Matanuska-Susitna area, and Fairbanks, and is being funded with state grants to the two organizations. The falling trend in visitor numbers to Alaska and Anchorage seems to have bottomed out, according to a trio of speakers at Monday's Anchorage Chamber of Commerce luncheon. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
The overall message was similar to other earlier predictions for 2011 and 2012. This year should see a mild increase in visitors, followed by a more substantial jump next year. However, 2012's numbers are not expected to equal the pre-recession high mark figures of 2008. Even so, Alaska could see a 4-5% visitor increase over 2010, with Anchorage a little stronger than the state percentage.
More than 1 million people will visit Anchorage in 2011.
Julie Soppe, president of the Anchorage Convention and Visitors Bureau. She said those visitor numbers translate into an estimated spending of $635 million. Soppe also said 2011's increased numbers have already begun appearing.
While winter is a small piece of our overall business, it is an important piece. Hotel occupancy in January through March was up about 12.5% over the same time period in 2010.
Soppe said Anchorage convention bookings are strong for this spring and fall. She happily described the four-day, 1,600-delegate aerospace medical convention currently underway at the Denina Convention and Civic Center. This year's boost in summer numbers will come primarily from airline visitors. Not only have Alaska's traditional carriers maintained strong flight connections, but there's also the return of Korean Air, as well as the new appearances of JetBlue and Edelweiss Air from Switzerland. John Binkley, president of the Alaska Cruise Association, said his industry will not see its increased numbers and economic impact until 2012. He explained that's because it normally takes about 12 to 18 months for cruise lines to change itineraries. Binkley credited the Parnell administration efforts to reduce cruise ship taxes and regulatory demands as luring the ships back.
Biggest addition really is the announcement by Princess that they will be bringing another ship to Alaska, a Grand Class ship, which will translate into about 50,000 more visitors coming to Alaska. Disney just recently announced that they are going to return to Alaska in 2012. That had been up in the air for them. They were willing to try it 1 year in 2011, but they had not made a decision yet as to whether or not they would come back in 2012. And Holland America is increasing their capacity by nearly 6%. That'll be by putting in larger ships into the rotation and a few more sailings as well. So we'll see 11,000 more additional passengers from Holland America.
Dee Buchanan of Siri Alaska Tourism stressed the importance of marketing Anchorage and Alaska as travel destinations.
One of the big things we've got going for us is that our top-of-mind awareness is incredibly strong.
She said cable television shows, including that of former Governor Sarah Palin, have proven valuable for the state's visitor industry.
Her shows, the Ice Road Truckers, other reality shows, have really made Alaska a top destination that people want to visit, and they're making plans to come here.
All three, Buchanan, Binkley, and Sauppe, emphasized that reality shows were not enough. They said Alaska must have a strong advertising presence. Buchanan sought to convince the chamber audience by playing a succession of four commercials now airing outside Alaska.
Alaska. It's the place you've always dreamed of, where the ordinary is simply extraordinary.
These are the first new ads produced by the Alaska Travel Association since 2003 and were made possible by increased state funding. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Initial attempts will be made this summer to combat an invasive plant growing in the Chena Slough and River. Fairbanks Soil and Water Conservation District invasive plant specialist Darcy Echeverry says a range of means will be tested to remove the Elodea weed that's clogging sections of the waterways.
A couple small manual and mechanical control trials using hand pulling and also utilizing a suction dredge. We have not talked about using herbicides in the slough yet, but it's definitely in the toolbox.
The Soil and Water Conservation District is drawing on a lot of experience from European nations and Russia, where Elodea has long been a problem. Fairbanks is the furthest north the invasive plant has been found in North America. The nearest known range on the continent is in British Columbia. The weed is thought to have been introduced in Fairbanks by fishing gear or an aquarium dumped into local waters. Elodea creates a monoculture and inhibits fish passage. And finally, tonight, a correction. Yesterday, we said there was only one amphibian in Alaska, the wood frog. But there are actually four kinds of amphibian in our state: frogs, newts, salamanders, and toads. There are two kinds of frog, the aforementioned wood frog and the Columbia spotted frog. There are two types of salamander, too, the long toad and the northwestern salamander. The rough-skinned newt and the western toad round out the list. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. Follow us on Twitter at aprn. We had reports tonight from Shane Iverson in Bethel, Chris Howe in Crooked Creek, Ed Ronco in Sitka, Len Anderson in Anchorage, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Full Circle. Full Circle grows, picks, and delivers fresh, certified organic produce year-round. More information about their 400-acre farm and their organic partners at fullcircle.com.
And by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.